Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right. It's Thursday. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians. What else are there? Working conservatives, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, I might add. It's nice to have you guys out there. Mark Riley, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing better than the lurking conservatives, many of whom are probably listening today because they got no place else to go.
The proverbial poop is hitting the fan, my friends. It couldn't be a bigger day. And I'm going to get into it. Throughout the day, we have a theme of the GOP splintering, fractioning, turning in on themselves. And, of course, there is a growing, what would you call it, criminal docket? Is it a docket? Possible indictments? I mean, dude, first of all, I want to say I think I might have avian flu. And I think I actually caught it from watching CNN. Is it possible to catch the flu, the avian flu, from just watching CNN? I swear to God, what a mistake that was. I turn on Paula Zahn before I go to bed. I'm eating some fish, you know, by myself because my wife has gone to write at a Starbucks. When did it happen that people can no longer write at home? They, you know, for some reason, there are people that are just sort of like, I need to write. I'm going out into the Starbucks or to wherever, to internet cafes to write. I understand it. It's just another excuse to be able to sit there and look at other people and go, I don't want to think about me or my writing right now. Look at that person. I'm going to have some coffee. I'm going to go smoke a cigarette, whatever the case. So I'm watching Paula Zahn. Dude, they're saying 100 million people could just all of a sudden get bird flu. They're bringing the military in. They're talking about quarantines, and they're talking about, you know, putting us, you know, separating people. And you know what? Martial law they're talking about. And then we talked about this yesterday. You know, Bush brought it up in his address. Any way to promote fear in a time of crisis among this particular party of people, the neocon death cult, is something they will do. I have to think they have something to do with it. I'm paranoid to the point, Riley, where I'm thinking there's a, you know, that Karl Rove is sitting somewhere in a bunker shaking a vial of bird flu going, when do I let it go?
Let me tell you something. There were a couple of scientists that discovered something apparently that they publicized yesterday that should scare people, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And that is that the outbreak of influenza in 1918, which was probably the most devastating outbreak of disease in human history, killed 50 million people worldwide, was a rare instance where bird flu jumped directly from birds to humans, and it devastated the world's population.
Now I got to, you know, I got to kill my pigeons. I got to stop doing the pigeon coop thing on my roof and all my.
Oh, you
friends.
Got one of them?
No.
Oh. Just kidding.
Oh, now see, don't.
When do you let him out? 3 a.m.
Sure, right before I go. There's a bunch of us that are just up on the rooftops in Queens, you know, sending our pigeons to each other. Look, what is that? I'm a little feverish. Do you think, do I have bird flu?
Because
I was playing.
It's cold in here. That's
all right. Look, folks, here's the deal. Here's the proverbial poop that is hitting the fan. Indictments are only days away in the leaked identity case involving who leaked the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame. And the word on the street is there could be as many as 22 indictments. 22 indictments. Oh, my God. That's unbelievable. Federal Prosecutor Fitzgerald is supposed to have notified officials by letter if they have become targets. He could announce plea agreements, bring the pain through indictments, or conclude that no crime was committed within the next few weeks, maybe few days. Karl Rove, the deputy chief of staff and senior advisor, and Scooter Libby, Cheney's chief of staff, are theoretically at the center of this investigation, Riley, but we have speculated and heard other people speculate that it might be a criminal conspiracy case, which means that everyone in the administration could be involved. And with 22 indictments, or possibly 22 indictments, who's to say that that's not true?
Well, you know, it could well be 22 indictments divided up among a relatively small number of people. For example, 5 people get indicted 5 times or on 5 counts. Or this could be a lot bigger than Fitzgerald has let anybody know until now. If there's 20 people involved in this, this is an incredible scandal.
Oh, my God, it's a whirlwind. It's a hurricane of crap falling down upon the Republican Party and America, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Rove's lawyers declined to, Karl Rove, of course, the man who is shaking the vial of avian bird flu, going, come on, we got to save our asses. Come on, let me just release it. Rove's lawyers declined to comment as to whether or not he had been notified by the federal prosecutor. Apparently, apparently Rove has been noticeably absent from recent White House events there.
Kidney stones.
Yeah, some people are screaming he had kidney stones in September.
The size of a basketball it must have been for him to be out of action.
I don't think it was kidney stones. I think it's the impending stoning that he's going to get by the federal prosecutor. Because the speculation is he might have received the target letter, which means, is that on a personal stationery? Does it come with a happy card? Do you do it? Do they get
Dear Carl, guess what?
Does he get an evite or what is it? Or one of those, not an evite, yeah, an evite to his trial?
Yeah, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald has sent you the following evite.
One of those greeting cards with
goofy
little cartoon. Da, 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 you're screwed.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? It's, we're having, it's old timey hippie day today. Did you know that, Riley? Later in the
show. Did you bring your band CD?
I should have. Later in the show, Paul Krasner is going to be here, the creator, inventor of The Realist, which in its heyday was quite the satirical rag.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. And also later in the show, we're going to have this guy, Rick Burnley, some dude I met over at Camp Casey when I was in Washington. He's a little hippie dude from Placidas, New Mexico. He lives out there, and he's wearing this groovy chili shirt that I thought was great. It was a little yin-yang red and green chili shirt that he designed. So I said, wow, are you from New Mexico? And he's like, yeah, man. And he says, I write poems. So he started reciting poems to me. It was tremendous. So we're going to have him.
Is he going to recite poems here?
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh.
He calls himself a Jedi poet. He's just a character, and Krasner's a character. We're going to hopefully get Mayor Villaraigosa from Los Angeles.
From Los Angeles.
On the phone to rap. But I swear to God, man, this is exciting. The possibility of 22 indictments. I've been waiting for this, Riley. I was too young to remember Watergate, and I was too politically detached to really remember or get involved with the Iran-Contra thing. I was too busy trying to figure out, which thin tie to wear and what band I liked. But now, this might happen before our very eyes, one of the biggest political scandals. Have you ever seen the amount of potential crap hitting the fan here, given the indictments? And you've got the majority leader in the Senate under investigation by the SEC. There's new allegations that someone was spying. Someone has been...
Allegations? That guy's been arrested.
Arrested for espionage.
And he worked in Dick Cheney's office.
Dig that. It's unbelievable. In Karl Rove, there's new crap on him. There's been three Texas grand juries, that have put out two indictments, but now there's talk of another Ponzi scheme that he was involved with.
You know what's really, for me, exciting about all this? And by the way, to answer your question, no, I have not seen any situation where there have been this many things going wrong. And here's the exciting part, ladies and gentlemen. As you wake up this morning, know that the Republicans can't cover all their behinds. They just can't.
That's right.
It's impossible.
It's coming apart at the seams.
Yes.
Trent Lott, Sam Brownback, on the extremes, stop saying Okay, I will. Let's not Springer it this morning. I am saying here now that these guys... Do you ever listen to Springer? As sweet as a man as he is, and he's very passionate, he punctuates with far more than I could ever imagine doing. And you don't even notice it. It actually becomes part of his flow. But now people are going to be like, I'm going to listen for that, and they're going to be driven crazy.
Uh-oh.
Crazy. So, look, it's a very exciting morning. We're going to talk about all the unfolding scandals. What was I talking about when I got into that? We're going to talk about the Supreme Court nominee.
Yeah.
Harriet Meyer is what's really starting to provoke this infighting, this fractioning of the GOP, of the Repubs, of the neocon death cult, the Repigs, as some people call them. And we're going to get into details about that because this is... Full on. This is the full broad spectrum of conservative thought, the full broad spectrum of conservative senators and congressmen, but also columnists and thinkers who are starting to turn on this president's nominee. And you were speculating before we got on the air here that he might have to pull it.
And let me tell you something. The Republicans are eating themselves before our very eyes. We are going through a very unique period of history. I know a lot of people, he's blown V8, he doesn't know it. Watch and see how this time is judged 10 years from now.
All right.
This is incredible what we're seeing happen here, where someone who was an evangelical Christian is not worthy to sit on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the details of it after this. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
20 past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to be in New Jersey tomorrow. I'm excited. I've not gone to New Jersey in a while. I spent a lot of my childhood in New Jersey. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken. That's 1039 Washington Street. That's 6 to 9 in the morning. We got the musician Ted Leo. He's going to jam. We got Chris Hedges is going to be there.
Author, he's deep, man.
Author Chris Hedges, very deep. We're going to talk about religious elements.
Darwin and God.
And we're going to talk about also, I'm sure he has something to say about the evangelical nature of this Supreme Court pick. We've got also, you know, Lawton Smalls, of course, MILF Cardinal Milfington will be there, Johnny K Street, the gang. So come on by to Maxwell's at 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken tomorrow morning. Have some free coffee and hang out with Mark and I. So let's get into the nuances of this thing. Let the infighting commence, my friends. If Trent Lott is against this Supreme Court nominee, I can guarantee you that is bad for the president. When ex-segregationist and supporter of a bad hairpiece, Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi, is the latest of many conservatives not thrilled with Bush's nomination of Harriet Myers. He basically said he needs to know more about her level of competence or philosophy. He said he owed his constituents and his own conscience to find out who she is. And here's a killer quote. He said, quote, there are a lot more men, women, and minorities that are more qualified, end quote. If Trent Lott is talking about constituents and conscience and minorities, he's definitely thinking about one thing, Trent Lott. This is definitely a sign of dissent among us Senate Republicans, and I think ultimately that they're all going to start jockeying here. I think Trent Lott would love his old job back, and Frist hasn't said anything, and he's in the hot seat, don't you think?
Well, see, there's a reason why Frist hasn't said anything. There's a reason why Harriet Myers' confirmation, in my judgment, may be in serious jeopardy. Now, you know, 48 hours ago, Mark, when we were talking about this, there's no way in the world I figure Republicans would scuttle a Republican, you know, the nominee of a Republican president. That's almost unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
But yet here we are on the verge of that actually taking place. Now, there were a couple of meetings yesterday that are reported in the Washington Post that people ought to be aware of. Ed Gillespie, and for those of you who have forgotten who Ed Gillespie is, he's a former RNC chair and general Republican bigwig. He was the person designated to try and get Harriet Myers past some of the more conservative members of Congress. Well, and some of the more conservative evangelical and other organizations as well. Two closed-door meetings yesterday. Apparently, one of them, like, erupted when Ed Gillespie said, you know, there's sexism, there's a whiff of sexism and a whiff of elitism in conservative opposition to Harriet Myers. They got mad and told him he had to take it back.
That's, I would have loved to have been there. Them just standing up going, no, shut up.
Yeah.
Take it back, you stinky.
Yep, that's exactly what seemed to happen. Now, they're still working the halls of the Senate. I assume Harriet Myers is going to make a personal appearance at Trent Lott's door, maybe give him some style tips on his hairpiece. I don't know.
Well, not surprisingly, though, also we got theocratic senator from Kansas, Sam Brownback, on Good Morning America, said that he believes that Roe v. Wade needs to be reconsidered, quote, because of the effects Roe v. Wade has had on the society and the unborn, end quote. And they wouldn't let me do Tom DeLay jokes on Good Morning America, and they got this theocratic, crystal fascist zombie brigade leader out there, you know, rambling on about the unborn. Unbelievable.
Let me tell you something. I do have some modicum of respect for people that may question Harriet Myers' qualifications, regardless of their political affiliation. If George Will questions it, fine. That's not a problem. But these conservative, evangelical, zealot yahoos who are saying she's not acceptable, that's a whole different thing. Because what they're trying to say is, we will determine for the American people exactly what kind of country we're going to have, because that's what the Supreme Court does.
We will dictate.
We will dictate
the morality that we believe in and the rules that that morality dictates to be what the American people should believe in as well. Those guys are fascists. They're theocratic fascists, and it's a disaster. Obviously, the competence issue is a whole other thing.
That's a whole other thing, but you know, there's a part of me that harkens back to when I was a kid, when confronted with this sort of, the first thing I do is flip somebody the finger.
Yeah.
That, because that's what I feel. It angers me. as an American, that these people will try and usurp what an American is and bend it and shape it to their own liking and then try and impose it on the rest of us.
And they won't, and America won't take it, and Bush is running out of friends.
Obviously, I ain't taking it.
Yep, that's good. Obviously, he's running out of friends right there in the White House. He's running out of friends in the Senate. I mean, these guys have to believe in him in some respect because they're all Republicans and they have their own agendas. But this is a very exciting time in terms of watching the infighting. And it's a very exciting time for Democrats who, you know, despite not having a plan, get to sit there and revel in this.
That's the amazing part. The Democrats haven't had to lift a finger. But ask yourself this question, folks. Where is Bush's A-team on Harriet Myers? Dick Cheney? Sorry, can't deal with it.
He's on Rush Limbaugh's show.
Yeah, he's got Libby, he's got Plaingate, and now he's got a little espionage situation to worry about. Rove? Kidney stones and Plaingate. Where's DeLay? Where's Frist? They're both busy, yeah, fending off charges. Anybody seeing Condoleezza Rice? That's not her area of expertise. And, of course, Ken Millman.
Yeah.
The silence is deafening out of this guy. So where is everybody?
Yeah, exactly. Where are they? We're going to tell you where a lot of them are, because a lot of them are either under investigation
or under a table
or being indicted. I mean, you know, you get people like Rush Limbaugh. You got people like Pat Buchanan, Richard Viguerie, who you talked about the other day.
Mr. Direct Mail.
Who can really change the outlook of a great many Republicans in terms of just not rank and file, but just, you know, regular zombies who have been hypnotized by this administration. Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council said yesterday, or the day before yesterday, quote, "I have a concern that Ms. Myers was helping to legitimize the drive of homosexual organizations for power and influence over our public policies," end quote. And as you were talking about, George Will, whose quote we didn't read yesterday, and George Will is a snot.
Yeah, he is.
There's no other way to describe that guy. He's just a pansy snot. But his quote, not unintelligent. I'll read his little bit here. This is George Will's quote. "It is important that Myers not be confirmed unless in her 61st year she suddenly and unexpectedly is found to have hitherto undisclosed interests and talents pertinent to the court's role. Otherwise, the sound principle of substantial deference to a president's choice of judicial nominees will dissolve into a rationalization for senatorial abdication of the duty to hold presidents to some standards of seriousness that will prevent them from reducing the Supreme Court to a private plaything useful for fulfilling whims on behalf of friends," end quote.
You know what that is?
It's a bunch of blather. Is he trying to
Let me distill.
Is he trying to be the new Buckley?
No.
Why did I even read that?
Let me distill it for you. You know what he's saying to Bush? What are you, some kind of idiot?
Yeah, why don't you just say that, George? That's why you're annoying. You see, there's a way to say this. I guess he's saying, like, you know, Buckley's going to be dead soon. We need somebody to do the convoluted conservative blathering, and I think I'm the guy. So we're going to get into the details of the criminal roster of what is happening in terms of indictments and accusations and real things. 27 past the hour, Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Here's a little quick tidbit for those of you just waking up, a little happy juice. In a poll Wednesday, Bush's approval rating here in New York City hit an all-time low of 29%. It was 35% in August. By the way, tomorrow, New Jersey, how are you? Good to see you. We'll be broadcasting from Maxwell's in Hoboken. That's 1039 Washington Street. It is a groovy, hip, rock and roll joint.
It's the legendary Maxwell.
That's right. I was there with Yolo Tango the last time I was there. I performed for Yolo Tango for them. It was just me performing for Yolo Tango. It was awkward. There's no people there, and they weren't even playing.
The two best-known rock spots in Jersey have always been the Stone Pony and Maxwell.
Stone Pony's down Asbury Park, though, right?
Yep.
That's a mythic. Look at Pashman's grabbing the mic. Ah, yes. Let me give you the history of the Stone Pony, because my hero, Bruce Springsteen, made his bones there. Go ahead. Get on the mic, you Jew.
No, that's all right. Nothing to say.
No, that's all right. What the hell's going on? Is that Dan Pashman for real?
I say Jew with love, because we are in between the celebration of the Jewish New Year and the upcoming Day of Atonement. So, look, let's get back into the news, because we're going to read the list, the criminal list, the accusations and indictments. But first, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Thank God we got this silly machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up, and I'm going to get sad. We're going to play Brendan's intro, and he's not here.
Uh-oh.
P.W. McDonald, off getting married. Tomorrow's a big day. Where's he getting married, in the Hamptons?
Somewhere in Jersey, I believe.
Oh, yeah? Maxwell's?
Somewhere in New Jersey.
That's going to be the surprise.
Actually, his wife, his future wife, is going to walk down the aisle to him going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
It's going to be so nice. All those people are going to see that side of Brendan that he never shows me, out of fear. The nice, vulnerable side where he's able to, you know, have friends and everything. With me, it's just sort of like, please stay out of my head, Mark Maron.
This is a one-way kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's feed this machine some headlines. From the Seattle Times, Bush may use troops quarantine if bird flu breaks out. I got a little fever. I'm feeling a little under the weather. All right, Bush may use troops quarantine if bird flu breaks out. Bush may use troops quarantine if bird flu breaks out. Translation, Dodo weighs in on bird flu. From Fox News, North Korea's Kim Jong-il may name a successor. North Korea's Kim Jong-il may name successor. Translation, Hollywood agent to revive career of Margaret Cho. She's a friend.
She's coming on with us.
She's coming on, thank God. We can talk about that show. So. She has a sense of humor, I was told. No, I'm kidding. I've known her for years. Uh-huh. I've known her for years. She's very funny to a small group of people. No, I'm kidding. Why can't a guy joke?
Yeah, right.
All right. From the Washington Post, new nickel features a cheerful Jefferson. New nickel features a cheerful Jefferson. Translation, new nickel shows Jefferson's Sally Hemings smile. There you go. All right, so here we go. Scandals galore. Let the festivities begin. Of course, first up, we have the infamous and now possibly 22 indictments in the Plame investigation. A federal prosecutor Fitzgerald is expected to signal within days whether he intends to bring indictments in this case. In days, we could see up to 22 indictments of almost anybody within the administration if it is a criminal conspiracy rap. True?
Well, yeah, true. And what's interesting about this unfolding indictment situation is this. Last Friday, Karl Rove's attorney said that he had never been told he was a target. Yesterday, when asked the same question, he declined to answer.
And there's a little more stink on Tom DeLay. DeLay deliberately raised more money than he needed to throw parties at the 2000 presidential convention, then diverted some of the dough to his buddy, majority and current majority leader, Roy Blunt, and his buddy's kid, Roy Blunt, little Roy Blunt.
Oh, you mean Philip Morris Roy Blunt?
Exactly. The guy, through a series of donations that benefited both politicians' causes. See, this is what they do. Him and Abramoff were famous for that. Abramoff, also, Jack Abramoff, the super lobbyist, he's been indicted big time.
Oh, yeah, and Blunt's wife is also a lobbyist. Remember that?
Oh, my God,
hey,
it stinks.
Man. This is K Street stink.
And then we got David Safavian, who has been indicted. This is the Bush administration's former chief procurement official. He was indicted last Wednesday by a federal grand jury on charges of making false statements and obstructing investigations into high-powered GOP lobbyist Jack Abramoff.
Uh-oh.
That was just yesterday.
Yeah.
The five felony counts in this indictment carry a potential top penalty of 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Here's an interesting one. This happened right under Dick Cheney's nose. A U.S. Marine has been charged with espionage while working in his office. The FBI and the CIA are calling it the first case of espionage in the White House. Isn't that amazing? The most secretive bastard in the world. The guy who was running the most secretive administration ever, you know, worse than Nixon, has got a spy literally in his pants. Just about.
Well, you're talking now about a really strange situation, an embarrassing situation, and a very real question of how and how deeply national security here is compromised.
Well, what
you've
are the
got
charges?
A spy in the White House?
Yeah.
This is espionage he's being charged with. This is not just, you know, talking to somebody or not just, you know, mislaying a few documents. This is taking documents out of the White House, emailing them to other people for the express purpose of undermining the reigning political party in the Philippines. Philippines.
Right. This guy was Leandro Araconcelo, a naturalized U.S. citizen from the Philippines, is accused of using his top secret clearance to steal classified intelligence documents from White House computers in order to support an alternate political party in the Philippines. He was funneling information that way. But it is espionage. It did happen in Dick Cheney's office. And then there's spying at the Pentagon. This guy, Lawrence Franklin, a senior Defense Department guy, pleaded guilty Wednesday to three criminal counts for improperly retaining and disclosing classified information. Franklin shared secret military information with two pro-Israeli lobbyists and an Israeli official in an effort to create a back channel to the Bush administration on Middle East policy. And, of course, Bill Frist under SEC investigation for insider trading. And meanwhile, 36 people were killed and 95 wounded yesterday when a suicide bomber in Iraq attacked a mosque on the first day of Ramadan. Also yesterday, Vice President Dick Cheney warned that the war on terror would last, quote, decades. And now, of course, bird flu. Hundreds of millions of people might get bird flu. See how they smokescreen? Now, this is where I get a little conspiratorially motivated. This is where my conspiracy theorist, and I know some people have a problem with that term because they have co-opted it and used it to describe this as wacko, so let's use the word independent speculative investigator. Uh-huh. I don't have the time to do the research, but, but on a medical level, Dan Pashman, who has been in the medical business, says that this bird flu is a sham, but there's still, it is on every news channel, and these are right-wing propaganda outlets or just irresponsible television that want to frighten people, but nonetheless, it seems like a tremendous distraction, and it also facilitates a sort of acceptance of the possibility of the military running the world.
That's the important part. It's a backdoor way to allow the military to involve itself with something that right now, by law, it cannot do.
All right, let's get to Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa on the phone to talk to us and you after this. 42 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Forty-six past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm feeling a little bird flu-y. I shouldn't have been playing with those ducks yesterday. I'm an idiot. Listen, attention, New Jersey, we're coming tomorrow, 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken, New Jersey. That's Maxwell's in Hoboken. We'll be there tomorrow morning, 6 to 9. We're going to have musician Ted Leo. We're going to have one of our favorite guests, writer Chris Hedges, to talk about religion. We're going to have Milf Cardinal Milthington, Lawton Smalls, Johnny K Street, the whole gang. Come down to Maxwell's in Hoboken tomorrow morning for some free coffee. Riley, you can sleep in. You don't need
Man, I'm looking forward to catching some Z's.
This May, our next guest beat out James Hahn to become the first Hispanic mayor of Los Angeles. Saturday marks the end of his first 100 days in office. He joins us now on the phone from Los Angeles to look back on his first 100 days and to give us an idea of what's in store for the future. Please welcome Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Mark and Mark. How
good morning.
Are you?
It's okay. Great to have you with us. So now, did your first 100 days go as well as you hoped, sir?
Well, they went as well as you could hope, given the fact that we had a few crises along the way. But I said from the very beginning that I'd work as hard as regular people do from my first day to my last. And I think we've demonstrated an energy level that the city hasn't seen in a long time. I understand we put 24,000 miles on my car in just the first 100 days. We've had to deal with a few crises, fires, and
yeah. Is that fire out yet, Mr. Mayor? I got a house out there in Highland Park. I just want to make sure it hasn't burned down yet.
Highland Park, boy, that's right where I live.
Yeah,
but your house in Highland Park isn't anywhere close to Chatsworth, where the fire is.
Okay.
I can tell you it's about 75% contained, and we expect that we'll have it completely under control. About 24,000 acres were destroyed, but I'll tell you something. Our fire department is just among the best anywhere in the nation, and they did an incredible job.
You know, the LAPD has had its problems in the past, certainly predating your mayoralty. How confident are you that you have a handle on police excesses in Los Angeles?
Well, first of all, the vast majority of our police officers put their lives on the line every single day and perform admirably. There are a few who don't, and we're going to deal with them. I've said that nobody's above the law. not a politician, a priest, or a police officer. And we've got to ensure that our department is working in a partnership with communities. When I talk about the appointments I made, I put a civil rights leader, the head of the Urban League for 37 years, John Mack, a former U.S. attorney who had worked on the Christopher Commission, which was the commission that looked into the department and issues of abuse and civil liberties and the like, in the 90s, right after the Rodney King incident, and she's on this commission. And we've got a group of people that are committed to having a strong police department, one that we support, but one that we also make accountable to the idea that in order to have a safe city, you need a partnership. You need mutual respect between the community and the police department, and that's our goal here.
Our guest is Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Let's talk a little bit about the Hispanic voting bloc. A lot of people are saying that it will be viewed like the Irish or Italian immigrant blocs were viewed generations ago. I know some factions within the Hispanic voting bloc are a little disappointed with President Bush. I'm happy about that. How do we get the rest of them to stay with the Democrats, sir?
Well, that's a very, very significant question. The way we do it, I think, first of all, what I've said is the Latino agenda is the American agenda. It's an agenda of good schools, good jobs, safe neighborhoods, an agenda that supports the environment, because we know that the most important thing that we could do is protect our natural resources and our air and water for the next generation of families. And sometimes, frankly, Democrats haven't understood enough that you know, it's not enough to just speak a few words of Spanish and you know, kind of work the vote that way. That you really got to address the issues. That's one. Two, I think we can't forget, and I think it's not just true for Latinos, it's true for all of us. Democrats haven't always done a great job. They do a great job at speaking to America's head, but don't do as good a job speaking to her heart. The issue of values is a very important issue. It's an issue to people on the right, the left, you know, Democrat, Republican, those in the middle. All of us care about values. I think we need to, as a party, to redefine what family values mean.
Mr. Mayor, how about the class issue within the Latino community itself? It seems that the Republicans are pandering a bit. I don't know how honest they're being to wealthier Latinos, yet we have an immigration and we have a different class of Latino coming in. Is there a schism there within our party?
Well, I think our party needs to do a better job overall, not just among Latinos, deal with people, address the issues that are important to people who have wealth, you know, but mostly I think we need to speak better to the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't realize that people care about education and health care and jobs and, you know, economic development, but they also care about some of those more ephemeral issues like, you know, what kind of future are my children going to have? Mm-hmm. Is the government sensitive to the rights of my family and, you know, my community? And I think it's important for us to speak to those matters as well and redefine what family values mean.
Our guest is Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. One last question, Mayor. Tell us one thing about your first 100 days there that has been a complete surprise, something you weren't expecting about the job.
I'll tell you something. I've spent a lot of time in Sacramento and Washington on this issue of Homeland Security because I realized but along with New York and Washington, D.C., we are the most significant targets for terrorists, and mm-hmm. we're going to have to beef up. And one of my concerns about the federal government is they talk a great game about making Homeland Security a priority, but don't fund local government's efforts because we're the first responders
yep.
to deal with Homeland Security threats at our airport and our port. Really don't give us the resources that we need. We've got to fight right now as we speak because there are some Congress members that want to allocate resources on a per capita basis as if this was, you know, some effort to distribute pork instead of on a threat basis and which we should allocate the money on. So it's a bigger issue than I would have thought, one that I find very significant and one where I think the federal government has a long way to go to provide the support for the first responders in our cities around the nation. Finally, let me just say something about poverty, because, you know, neither Democrats or Republicans talk enough about the just extensive poverty that we see in America.
Yeah.
You know, if there was, for all of us, as we watched in horror at the victims of Hurricane Katrina, I think what was particularly disturbing to Americans of whatever political persuasion was the idea that there's so much poverty in our cities. And you know, I've said to people that LA's the poverty capital of the United States of America, and if we had a catastrophe of that magnitude, you would see the same dark underbelly of poverty and class and race that you saw there. Different than New Orleans, it wouldn't just be a black face on poverty, it would be a brown and black one. But America can do a better job of that, and we're spending so little in terms of resources and investment. I think both parties need to address this issue of poverty and investment in our urban areas, and something that I certainly intend to do in the coming years.
Well, I'll tell you, it was great talking to you, Mayor Villaraigosa from Los Angeles. I wish you more luck in your tenure as mayor of that city. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Thank Mr. Mayor.
Bye, guys.
I love talking to my neighbor. So, look, you know, we got Paul Krasner coming up. It's an old-timey hippie day. We've got a cat named Rick Burnley, who calls himself the Jedi Poet, who I met at Camp Casey down in Washington, D.C. I just told the guy, I was at Air America, and he comes up to me and goes, well, I got some poems for you. You know, and he got into my face with it. You know, I was captivated like I was at a Dead show in the parking lot, and the mushrooms were just kicking in, and some old hippie just said, let me tell you some stories.
You know, it's incredible. Speaking of poems, we lost a poet and a comedian earlier this week.
Yes, we did.
Nipsey Russell passed away at the age of 80. People remember him from Car 54, from the Hollywood Squares. He was on a million different quiz shows. But one thing people may have forgotten is that he used to be a disc jockey, a radio disc jockey on WLIB, our flagship station right here in New York.
How do you like that? You're showing your age, Riley, calling them quiz shows.
Yeah.
Who calls them quiz shows?
Isn't that what they call them?
I don't know. Are you going to get in your automobile after work?
Yeah.
I think quiz shows. Oh, don't take it.
No, well, in those days, they were quiz shows.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Well, he was on Match Game. That's where I remember him from. He's actually on a lot of these Dean Martin variety shows that I've ordered that I get every month now. Every month.
How many?
Dude, it's like Columbia Record House, man. You just sign up, and like every month, it's like, all right, how much Dom DeLuise do I need? How do I get out of this? There's Nipsey Russell again, and Dean. As great as they are, Nipsey's on a lot of them. He's
He is, definitely.
He played a barber. Him and Dom DeLuise do this bit where they're both barbers, and Dean sits down, and whoever's the guest sits down, and they do a little shtick.
Wow.
Whether it be Jonathan Winters or Peter Sellers. Look, it's coming down. The crap storm is hitting the GOP, and the Repubs are freaking out. We're going to get into it in detail in a minute. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That's right. It's 6 past the hour. It's Thursday. Good morning. How are you? It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
I feel I got to, you know, sometimes in my act, I juggle live chickens, and I think I got that bird flu thing. I don't know what the hell. I'm feeling a little, do I look sick? I feel like
I might
have the bird flu. And also at home, yeah, I use a bird as a scissor. You know, have you ever watched the Flintstones?
Yes.
Because I don't like to scissor scare me, so I just use a live bird as a
scissor.
How
about a dinner whistle? Do you pull on the back feathers like
that? Yeah, everything in my house, most of my appliances are living birds. So I'm like really at risk for this thing, and I'm a little frightened by it. Look, folks, we're going to be in New Jersey tomorrow. I'd like you to come down. Would you please? I have some important things to tell you. We're going to be at Maxwell's. It's at 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken, New Jersey. That's tomorrow, of course, from 6 to 9. We're going to have musician Ted Leo with us. Chris Hedges, the brilliant and deep author. I guess he's a writer. He's a former war reporter. And he's written a book about the Ten Commandments, and also he's just a very informed journalist. And we've also got Lawton Smalls, MILF Cardinal Milfington will be there, Johnny K Street. It's all going to be at Maxwell's tomorrow morning in Hoboken, so come on down. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. I think I got the bird flu. Mississippi Senator Trent Lott has said that Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers is clearly not the most qualified person for the job. Lott said he didn't know enough about Harriet Myers to make a decision, adding, if you want to wear a robe and keep your personal life secret, you could always join the Klan. Lott said of the president, it's not enough to just say, trust me. Adding, he's going to have to say, trust me, here's a bag of money. Suicide attacks are dividing Muslim jihadists. Many worry that the carnage is alienating some who are otherwise sympathetic to the militants' cause. A jailed cleric Abu Bakr Bashir, believed to be the spiritual leader of Al-Qaeda, has denounced the suicide bombing, saying, quote, by December, I probably wouldn't even want to kill Americans. It happens every year. The closer it gets to Christmas, the mushier I feel. End quote. Opponents of suicide attacks have suggested Opponents of suicide attacks have suggested lowering the reward the bombers get in paradise. Currently, suicide bombers are eligible for 72 virgins. Some suggest cutting that number in half or replacing some of the virgins with, quote, somewhat slutty women.
Oh, my God.
President Bush's job... they are better. President Bush's job... I never had sex with a virgin.
Really? I have.
Really?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It was great.
Maybe we should go to another slot on the dial if we're going to have this conversation. President Bush's job approval ratings have hit an all-time low in New York, with just 29% giving him favorable ratings. Things that got really bad yesterday when Democratic leaders accused President Bush of an information blackout to keep the public from focusing on setbacks in Iraq. Bush denied this, saying, quote, I haven't had a blackout since the 70s. Oh, man, a little while. It's old-timey hippie day with Paul Krasner. He's got a new book coming out called One Hand Jerking. Political poet Rick Burnley, political poet, that's an interesting way to put it. This guy is an old-timey hippie veteran who's part of the oral tradition telling poems off the top of his head. I met him down at Camp Casey in Washington, D.C. when I was down there. I tell you, Riley, I'm watching CNN. Look out, the bird flu. So everyone's going to get the bird flu, and the military's going to manage everyone dying of the bird flu.
Well, you know, it's starting to get scary. George W. Bush has tried previously in the wake of the hurricanes to try and find some role for the military in law enforcement during the course of emergencies, and now he's found the perfect vehicle. And that is the fear of bird flu.
He's not going to distract us. So I'll tell you what does distract me is Paula Zahn. Am I the only one? I don't know what it is about that woman, but I am completely captivated by her. I think, what is she, like 9 feet tall?
I don't know.
I like giant women.
Giant women?
My wife is very...
She's tall.
Is very, she actually came... the first thing she said to me when she got here the other day was, are you getting shorter? I swear to God, are you getting shorter? And I'm like, yes, I'm going to be the crumpled old Jewish man that walks down the street with you.
Uh-oh.
You know, like those... like Boris and... who was that?
Natasha.
Exactly.
Boris Badenoff.
Okay, here we go. Let's feel some excitement for the demise, the potential demise of the Republicans. First off, indictments are only days away in the leaked identity case involving who leaked the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame. And there could be as many as 22 indictments, folks, the proverbial poop hitting the fan for the GOP. Good news, I say. Karl Rove, deputy chief of staff and senior advisor, and Scooter Libby, Cheney's chief of staff, are thought to be at the center of this investigation, as far as we know. Unless it's a conspiracy rap, then who knows, man? 22 indictments, as you said earlier, could be just a few people, could be everybody.
It could be everybody, and you know, you could have a situation where, at least for progressive, the more the merrier. Because if you have, let's say, 15 people who are indicted, then you can flip a couple of them on the rest.
Oh, it's tremendous. And there's also the federal investigation into Jack Abramoff. That's the lobbyist who, you know, was partners with Tom DeLay. And I think some of that information, because you remember, they sent someone to question Margaret Thatcher in the yeah. Jack Abramoff thing about DeLay's trip there. And I think some of that information is making its way to Texas, because Texas District Attorney Ronnie Earl said that evidence that was obtained last weekend is what led to the second indictment of Tom DeLay on money laundering charges.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool, man. And I'll tell you another thing that's cool, man, if you can dig it, is that one of the jurors who returned the original indictment of conspiracy, that was on the first grand jury, said, quote, "The only thing the grand jury bases its decisions on is the evidence presented to us. We had quite a lot of evidence, my friends. Quite a lot of evidence. Tom DeLay going down. Karl Rove perhaps going down. Scooter Libby maybe going down. David Safavian, the Bush administration's former chief procurement official, was indicted yesterday. Was he dragged out in handcuffs? I hope so. Going down, my friend." Espionage in Dick Cheney's office. A guy, a Marine, was charged with espionage while working in Dick Cheney's office. The most secretive political operator in history has got a spy in his pants, practically, my friends.
He took stuff, allegedly, this is Leandro Aragoncillo, took information, classified information, spread it out by email for political gain inside the Philippines. And the White House is extremely embarrassed, extremely nervous by this. If you think they were nervous because they couldn't respond to a hurricane, how nervous do you think they are when the American people wake up this morning and realize that there was a spy in the White House?
There's a spy at the Pentagon too, Riley. It never ends. This guy, Lawrence Franklin, a senior Defense Department official, pleaded guilty Wednesday to three criminal counts for improperly retaining and disclosing classified information. That's right in Donald Rumsfeld's pants, right in the same building. Bill Frist, under SEC investigation for being a dirty bastard and inside trading in his own company.
Well, you know, Frist and DeLay have kind of taken a back seat with all the flap over Harriet Myers and all this other stuff. But be very clear about the fact that Tom DeLay has got a problem on his hands. No matter how much he tries to slander and slur the DA in Texas, Robbie Earl, no matter what else he tries to do here, the fact of the matter is a grand jury that was led, by the way, by a former deputy sheriff. That guy that you just talked about, he's an old man. He's a retired deputy sheriff.
Ronnie Earl?
No. The guy. Gibson, the guy that was the grand jury foreman in that case. He said, look, Ronnie Earl didn't indict this guy. We indicted this guy.
There were three grand juries investigating Tom DeLay, and in the first jury, that's where you get the criminal conspiracy charge. The second grand jury, for some reason, couldn't find anything. I think they just didn't want to do their work. And the third grand jury, that was on Monday, indicted him for money laundering. This is a beautiful thing. Maybe one day that smug, confident, weird smile that guy has on his face will turn into something a little more sad and pathetic. If you want to celebrate with us in the potential downfall of the GOP, or pipe in or just talk to us, 866-303-2270 is our number. If you've got anything you want to share, or you just want to say yay, because when we come back in just a second, we're going to be talking a lot about the fractioning of the Republican operation in relation to this nomination of Harriet Myers for Sandra Day O'Connor's Supreme Court position. They are freaking out. The religious right's freaking out because she's not freaky enough, and the regular conservatives and the regular conservatives are freaking out because she may not know how to do the job. It's exciting. I'm excited. It's 15. Do I have bird flu? 15 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Twenty past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
I guess in a few minutes we're going to have the new radio theater, perhaps. Yes. And also we've got Paul Krasner coming up. It's old-timey hippie day here at Morning Sedition. We've got a few calls on the line of you folks because we are celebrating the possibility of certainly Tom DeLay going down. And certainly, I mean, the indictments are coming in. And also just a fractioning of the GOP. I mean, look at this. I'll tell you, you got Trent Lott, ex-segregationist and supporter of a very bad hairpiece. Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi is the latest of many conservatives not thrilled with Bush's nomination of Harriet Myers. He basically said, like many Democrats and Republicans alike, he needs to know more about her level of competence, her philosophy. He said he owed his constituents and his conscience, whatever that looks like, to find out who she is. And he said, quote, there are a lot more men, women, and minorities that are more qualified, end quote. Now, if Trent Lott is talking about constituents and conscience and minorities, he's definitely thinking about one thing, the future of Trent Lott. And this is certainly a definite sign of dissent among Senate Republicans, and it's spreading. You know, well, Senator Brownback from Kansas, of course, is disappointed because he's a theocrat, and it's not clear just how much he's going to limit the rights of Americans, so he's disappointed. You've got Tony Perkins, the president of Family Research Council, not a politician, but somebody who is powerful within the religious right. He's questioning her. Rush Limbaugh said that, quote, there was an opportunity here to show some strength and confidence, and I don't think this is it. It seems to me from the outset that this is a pick that was made from weakness, end quote, accusing the president, his leader, his savior, of being weak. Pat Buchanan against it. Richard Viguerie against it. A lot of conservative pundits against it. It's amazing, Riley, because your speculation is that he might have to change his tune, change the nominee, which would show complete chaos.
Yeah, it would.
And also that there's the possibility that if these guys vote her down, then the filibuster could come into effect and the political liability. It's just great. I'd like to talk to somebody else here. Jennifer, listening to LIB, what do you have to say? Are you excited?
I'm so excited, but the thing is, you read this laundry list of indictments before, and I'd just woken up, and I was getting so excited, and I thought, well, where the hell is Norquist?
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm a pig. This isn't that, like, 22 people can get indicted and it's not enough for me?
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, the other thing I want to say is, you know, grand juries indict, not DAs. And so I had seen tape of DeLay, you know, when he was talking about Ronnie Earl. You know, his peers indicted him.
Right, exactly. And two times, two different ones.
Yeah. And, you know, the other person you can add to your list of people that are angry is there's a hell of a column by George Will.
I know.
Oh, yeah. We talked about him.
We read his quote earlier, but it was, he's a guy that I found in reading what he wrote, it's better to read him on the paper than to actually say it out loud because it's very convoluted. But
he's a pompous jerk.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know what? He called Bush stupid. I mean, that's essentially what he said.
I know. Okay, well, I'll give him that. But, you know, I'd like to indict some of these pundits while we're at it. But
yeah. I'd
give anything to take Hannity away and cuss on the air.
That would be great.
To watch Falafel King Bill O'Reilly go crazy on the air.
Take them all in cuffs. That'd be great.
I'm watching when it happens.
Oh, I hope you are, too. Thanks for calling, Jennifer.
Take it easy.
Thanks.
That's hilarious. We got to indict pundits. How do we make that happen? It's a good point she made, though, because in the language, in the way we talk about Ronnie Earl, I think it supports their frame sometimes in terms of saying it's political because we use his name. But she's right. A grand jury is a grand jury.
Yeah.
These are people. This is not one guy.
The prosecutor presents evidence. Certainly the prosecutor is the one that has amassed the evidence. But as you saw with one of these grand juries, if the grand jury doesn't think there's enough there, they call up what's called a no true bill. They don't indict anybody, which is what happened once.
Joan, listening to WLIB in Long Island, what's on your mind?
Oh, I'm so happy. I mean, 20 indictments. I mean, I'm just praying that they get Karl Rove.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be exciting? Wouldn't you love to see him in handcuffs?
Huh? You know, but I have to say I'm so happy since DeLay was indicted. I am concerned about this latest nominee because I don't think it's good news when Bush says, trust me. That means, she's one of his cronies.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Yeah, and you're frightened about the future of Roe v. Wade.
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
exactly.
Well, that's a good point to make, and thanks for calling, Joan. You know, that is a very scary thing, and you get people like Sam Brownback of Kansas who says that if she doesn't speak up on this and guarantee the theocrats, a religious right, the people that want to restrict the rights of Americans who don't believe the way that they do, that she will not reinvestigate or reconsider Roe v. Wade, then he don't want her.
You know, Brownback puts her in a very tough position. He says on the one hand, it would not be proper for her to talk about her own views as far as abortion is concerned, but he does want her to publicly say that she will reconsider Roe versus Wade should she get the gig. It puts her between a rock and a hard place, and I'm not sure that there aren't more conservatives that want to see her in that same place. It's amazing that evangelical right-wing Christians are beating down one of their own.
Alice in Westchester, listening to WLIB. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. It's so wonderful to hear you.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to mention about Roe v. Wade. That is really a red herring as far as this country is concerned.
Yeah.
When you look at the facts on the ground, abortions are more and more difficult to get. You can't get an abortion in Mississippi. They don't care what they do in terms of the law of the land,
mm-hmm.
because when you look at the people who are providing them and where people can go and the parental notifications, they're chipping away at it on the ground, and there's and nobody is talking about
that's
that.
That's true. They're making states are making it difficult, and that's how they're doing this on a state level through separate legislation on behalf of the state. So literally, some people have to travel over half the country to get abortions.
That's true. And so really, you know, and everybody keeps talking about what the Supreme Court nominee will be doing. Let's look at what our legislatures are doing. Let's look at what Rick Santorum is doing.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Alice. We got to go on a little, take a little rest here. Thank you for calling. And when we come, I keep saying that we're not going anywhere. I'm sitting here. In a few minutes, we got Uncle Paul Krasner from The Realist from the old-timey hippie days is going to be here.
Uncle from the old-timey hippie days. You make me feel wonderful over
there. Yeah, I love Paul Krasner. I've written for his publication, The Realist, before. It's 27 past the hour. Stay tuned for him, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Mark Maron entertains a gaggle of groovy guests at a swinging downtown pad in Mark After Dark.
Hey, 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 hep cats and kittens, welcome to Mark After Dark, where we hang out with the brightest stars in the heavens of Hollywood. I'm looking around at Jimmy Caan, Sammy Davis, Lenny Bruce is over there. How you doing, baby? So now that I'm comfortable in my satin pajamas and monogram bathrobes, let's wander around and talk to the guests. Yes. Well, now, who do we have here?
It's me, Mark Riley. There are no celebrity guests. It's the middle of the night. And if you're going to do this, you can't do it in my house. My wife is just about to lose it on you.
Is he still here?
Oh, hey, who do we have here? It looks like singer Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet.
Actually, we're Riley's neighbors, John and Laura Hendricks.
We're not singers or anything. We both work at H&R Block. We're just too polite to leave.
Well, babe, you're the hottest ticket in show biz today.
Thank you.
So look who's here, the hottest comic out there. He's blowing people's minds with his far-out take on things. Lenny Bruce, ladies and gentlemen.
I really don't know who Lenny Bruce is. Could you just pay me for the pizza, mister? I really have to get back to work.
It's 3:00 in the morning. I want him out now.
This has been Mark After Dark on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Here we go. It's 35 past the hour. Our next guest is one of the great counterculture satirists. He's got a new book coming out in November called One Hand Jerking, and he'll be at the New York Society for Ethical Culture this evening for a night of American satire hosted by Seven Stories Press. Good morning, Paul Krasner.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good morning.
How are you, man? It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a while. It's not just me tonight, though. It's also, it's a panel. It's Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep.
Art Buchwald,
yep.
Who I was didn't even know if he was still alive. I think it's a kind of Weekend Bernie's Weekend at Bernie's thing. Barry Crimmins, who you know as a good political stand-up.
Of course we know Barry Crimmins over here.
And me, and we're going to be introduced by Lewis Lapham, who's the editor of Harper's.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a good night of funny and thinking and intelligence. I know that Kurt Vonnegut's got a new book. I know that you got a new book coming out, and this is your latest writings over the last couple of years.
Or, yeah.
And now, it looks like the crap is hitting the fan with the Republicans right now. That must be thrilling because you were around to you did. I don't know if people know that you were the one that did that amazing story in The Realist about LBJ on the plane with Kennedy's body.
Yes.
Share that story, because I don't know if people who might be listening who didn't know that about you.
Well, the context was, in 1967, William Manchester had published a book approved by the Kennedy family called Death of a President, about the assassination.
Yeah.
And Jacqueline Kennedy and Robert Kennedy tried to stop it because there were parts that they didn't approve of. And so I tried to get the original manuscript through my own sources and was unable to, so I was forced to write the parts left out myself. So I started with stuff that was true. So in the primaries, Lyndon Johnson had said that John Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, when he was ambassador to England, was a Nazi sympathizer, which was true. So I mentioned that and then kind of peeled off layers of an onion with stories that reporters knew were true about the affair with Marilyn Monroe, but the general public didn't know, and layer after layer until it finally got to a scene of presidential necrophilia on the plane, which people believed. I mean, and this wasn't ordinary necrophilia. I mean, there's different types of necrophilia. You know, there are people who are monogamous, who just stick with one corpse, and there's others who are casket hoppers and go from one to another. They're pretty promiscuous necrophiliacs. But in this case, it was in the throat wound.
Yeah.
And it was a pragmatic thing. It was in order to enlarge the entry wound from the grassy knoll to make it look like an exit wound from the Texas Book Depository.
That is some dark stuff, man. Yeah. But it was bold to me because, obviously, because America certainly couldn't tolerate that type of satire today, because satire does not exist like that on that degree anymore in this culture. I don't think that this culture really effectively knows what satire is, or let alone what a good comedy is.
Well, things are so bizarre now that, and even then, they took it as a news story.
Right.
You know, it was because so many bizarre things have happened. People think so that a piece of satire then is now an urban myth.
Right. So now,
people believed it literally.
I know.
I mean, intelligent people, even Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers leaker, told me that he believed it because he wanted to believe it. And also, he knows things like that went on in the CIA.
Well, what do you think of this? I mean, this administration is crazy. They found that there was a spy in Dick Cheney's office this yesterday, who was actually spying for on behalf of the Filipino someone who wants to take down the current Filipino leader.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think of as far as you
without even asking Pat Robertson's permission?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
What have you been reacting to the most lately in terms of the administration?
Oh well, it's bizarre to see people like Pat Buchanan and Rush Limbaugh and these guys suddenly turning on the president's credibility.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that absolutely.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, exactly. You get new justice possible Supreme Court justices from crony.com.
Yeah.
You think she's going down? You think she can get confirmed?
I'm beginning to wonder.
See, Maren, didn't I tell you this morning? I'm starting to wonder whether or not these Republicans are going to eat themselves to the point that they would reject one of their own.
And, you know, it's just, it's the arrogance of religious fanatics in the White House, who when Bush said he had all this capital to spend now, I think he's already in debt.
Yeah,
that's for sure. The country's certainly in debt.
Yeah.
And now, when you when this book comes out, where'd you the title from "One Hand Jerking"? Obviously, that has its certain connotations. But
The sound of one hand jerking is laughter.
Is it? All right. So what are some of the topics in the book that you cover?
Let's see. It's pornography, drugs. There's a lot of little short columns.
I didn't ask you your hobbies.
And then some long articles. There's one on blowing deadlines with Hunter Thompson. One on the rise of Sirhan Sirhan and the Scientology hierarchy.
What is that about?
I did a lot of research.
Really?
Did I really do research,
yeah.
or did I come up with that conclusion?
Did you just come up with that conclusion?
You know, the subtitle of One Hand Jerking is reports from an investigative satirist.
Yeah.
And so when I write satire, I do a lot of research.
Sure.
You know, I do more fact checking than Judith Miller did.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to be writing the truth.
Right.
So, I think that, there's also a piece. The longest piece in the book is a 5,000-word essay on Lenny Bruce, whose autobiography I edited,
yes.
How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. And in fact, it was this year it got a Grammy nomination for the best album notes category. I didn't even know they had such a category.
Really?
They got best album. Yeah, best liner notes.
Yeah. For what? For the new box set of Lenny Bruce? What? Which one? For
The 6-CD. Let the Buyer Beware.
I didn't get that one. I have all the original ones. Do I need to get that one?
I feel like Clinton. It depends on what the meaning of need is.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan.
I understand you had a problem with some of the language that New York Governor Pataki used in pardoning Lenny Bruce.
Oh, I resented it. I'm glad you mentioned that because it made Pataki look like a wonderful freedom of speech guy when he was actually an opportunist who took at least 5, 6, 7 months since the petition to actually do the pardon and posthumous pardon. And it reminded me, you know, in 1 year, Bono, when he used one of the great profane words when he accepted an award, the head of the FCC, Michael Powell, then said it wasn't considered obscene because he didn't say it in the sexual context. It was just an adjective, so that's okay. So, you know, I could say finger as long as it's a noun and not a verb by that logic. So now I think Pataki is going to revoke the Lenny Bruce pardon just to be consistent, because that's what happened with Bono. A year later, after the Janet Jackson incident, when the media made such a mountain out of an implant, the Bono decision was changed, and then it was considered ex post facto obscene.
Yeah.
A year later.
That's interesting. So he, the Lenny Bruce legacy is pretty profound. Do you feel that it still has? Are there people out there? Because Lenny Bruce was really about revealing hypocrisy, wasn't he?
Basically, yes.
For the most part. And it becomes, there's so many layers now, and the amount of speculation you have to do to get to the heart of hypocrisy, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of commitment.
Oh, yeah. You know, for years I've been wondering, what would Lenny be saying now? What would he be thinking about this?
Yeah.
You know, we knew each other so well, I almost felt like I was being channeled, so. I've been working on a novel based on with a comedian, the protagonist, based on a contemporary Lenny.
Uh-huh.
So the biggest hypocrisy now has to do with after Katrina, all of the federal officials who kept saying that in the case of death with dignity in Oregon or medical marijuana in California, that the federal laws superseded the state laws, even though they approved of these measures. But with Katrina, all of a sudden, they were saying, oh, no, this is not federal, this is...
responsibility of the states.
Right. States' rights is no longer just for racists. And so there were so many asses being covered, it began to look like a Christo art project at that time. It's bizarre, you know, how they can take such double standards.
So you miss Hunter S?
He was kind of fun, you know, but he was the last time I thought I would see him was at a memorial for Allen Ginsberg when but Hunter didn't show up, but Johnny Depp showed up, because he played him in a movie.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray, I would love to have had Hunter there with Bill Murray, who played him in another one,
sure.
And Johnny Depp, just so I could say, will the real Hunter Thompson please fall down?
But now, did you see him shortly before his suicide at all? Did you talk to him?
No, we were in contact. I mean, the topic blowing deadlines comes because when he went on, he was supposed to write a report on his tour, on his book tour, when Hell's Angels came out.
Mm-hmm.
And for my magazine, The Realist.
Yeah.
And he kept postponing his deadlines and postponing it.
Uh-huh.
And then when he finally... he decided not to do it, and he returned. I gave him $200 in advance, and he returned it, so he was honorable about it. But, I said, do you want some acid? and he wrote back and said, no, I'm okay. And then 2 weeks later, he said, yeah, on second thought, send me some acid, and I'll send you some beautiful marijuana plants if you promise to plant them in Central Park. So,
what year was that?
This must have been, in
71?
67 is when he wrote the book. And then okay. I gave him another assignment. He was going to run for sheriff of Aspen.
Yeah.
And there were two other countercultural icons who were going to run in other cities. And they came through, but Hunter didn't. He did it for Rolling Stone instead. So,
big money.
As an editor, I was frustrated, but as a writer, I could understand.
Sure. Mm. Was that the "Let's Make the Roads Dirt Again" campaign?
I
think so. I love that one. Paul Krasner will be appearing at Beating Around the Bush, an evening of American satire hosted by Seven Stories Press this evening. That's from 7 to 9, the New York Society for Ethical Culture, along with Kurt Vonnegut, Art Buchwald, and our very own Barry Crimmins. It was great to see you, Paul. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you. Have fun.
Also, we're giving away two tickets if you're interested. 866-303. What is it? 866-303-2270. That's hilarious.
Hilarious. Can I mention, I don't know if you ever saw the Disneyland Memorial Orgy, which I published.
I did. I have a copy of the poster.
Well, it's now been digitally colored, and it's available from my website, paulkrasner.com.
Oh, you got to go see that. That's a classic. I didn't know. So you got the legal rights to put that up now?
Well, I had. They never sued me because it was the first really irreverent treatment of those characters.
Yeah.
And so they didn't tell me to cease and desist.
Oh, good.
They did sue somebody who pirated it.
Oh, okay.
So this is the same poster.
That's great. If you want to see the Disney characters in a wild, mad sex orgy, go to, paulkrasner.com?
Yeah, two S's.
Two S's. 48 past the hour. We'll talk to you in a second. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
All right, 53 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey,
I feel nauseous, man. I think it's my pet emu. That damn bird. You know what I mean? I got the three cats and the emu, and I think I got that bird flu. 100 million people, they said, and then the military's gonna station a guy right at my house while I go through the sweats. I wonder if he's gonna give me juice and stuff like my wife does. Is that what's gonna happen with the quarantine? If you get the bird flu, they send a marine to your house to take your temperature and give you orange juice and stuff?
No, they just send a marine to your house to make sure you follow orders.
Oh man, it's getting weird. Hey folks, I want to tell you out there how much I love doing this job. I'm glad that you people are listening to me. My contract's coming up for a renegotiation in just a little while. I just want to say that I love you if by any chance I am disappeared. Do you understand? That happens.
Disappeared. That happens in Argentina.
It happens in Air America, too. Hey, here we go. Let's talk about this. Selena Jarvis. This is a woman who's the chair of the social studies department at Currituck County High School in North Carolina. And apparently she has been questioned by the Secret Service because one of her students got ratted out from a Walmart store. Here's the whole story. Jarvis, this woman, the chair of the social studies department at a high school, assigned her senior civics and economics class to take photographs to illustrate their rights in the Bill of Rights. All right, so one kid takes a photo of George Bush out of a magazine, tacks the picture onto the wall with a red thumbtack through his head. Then he made a thumbs up, thumbs down sign with his own hand next to the president's picture, and he had a photo taken of that, and he pasted that on a poster. This is like a photo within a photo. All right, so he goes to get these developed at Walmart, and some little snot. I mean, what kind of idiot who works at Walmart, where he doesn't even get health coverage, sees this picture, takes it upon himself to call the authorities on a high school kid who's got a picture of himself next to a picture of George Bush with a thumbtack to his head, giving the thumbs down sign. What kind of snotty little douchebag of a kid? What kind of rat fink? It's ridiculous. So he calls it. I just had a Springer moment. So he just, it's ridiculous, you know? So, on Tuesday, September 20th, the Secret Service came to Currituck High. And the student apparently was interrogated.
Yeah. And they took his poster.
Don't they have better things to do?
Apparently not.
That is unbelievable to me.
Are photo lab people allowed to actually, like, look at your photos and, like...
Are they allowed?
Well,
they,
I mean...
That's the only reason. That's the biggest perk of the job.
Exactly. Why did they
take that job?
I've had naked photos, you know, taken, and I've given them to, you know, photo labs.
Yeah, and they still got them.
Kalo, have you ever seen the machines that do that? If you go to a photo place, they're just going around on a loop. There's a whole strip of your pictures that run through a machine. So, yeah,
exactly. It's just a machine.
Yeah, but there's a guy standing there, and there's people at the counter that are going, whoa, could you stop the machine? What is with that guy? Oh, my God, he needs to lose some weight. Oh, you left it wide open. By the way,
you couldn't be nice, right?
I could be nice. It was nice to us. We went to the Green Market yesterday. Kayla and I. We took a walk together through the Green Market on
what'd
a beautiful fall day. We went to the lesbian fish market. I got some smoked bluefish and some tuna. I turned Kayla on to the tuna and the bluefish thing and some good apples.
They almost got mad at you.
I don't know what the hell is going on there today.
Why did they get mad with him?
Because he almost broke, like, the...
Wasn't she, yelling at the other woman? I thought there was a new lesbian there that didn't know the rules opening the case.
You got yelled at. You're the straight guy. You got yelled at.
I thought both lesbians were mad at you.
So what's new?
I guess they listen to the show. Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't think we are derogatory about lesbians. And I like this fish market. No, what happened was there's a case with the fish in it, and they push open.
Yeah.
And apparently it's deteriorating or it's old, and I opened it too much because I was trying to hold it because the new lesbian didn't know what she was doing.
And you were being nice.
I was being nice, and then all of a sudden there I am with my small penis going, I'm sorry. How does that happen so quickly? It's not small. Anyway, we got we'll be back in a second. That's right. It's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Oh, man. You know, I knew that was a bad idea to bring a Kiwi into the house. And I'm talking about the wingless Australian bird because I feel ill and I think I got the bird flu. You know, between the Kiwi, the emu, and the juggling of the chickens, and of course, the bird scissors that I have from the Flintstones.
And you haven't mentioned the pigeons on your roof.
The pigeons that I send out to talk to my other friends who have pigeons. Basically, just write notes to each other saying, dude, you get my pigeon? Yeah. I got it. Well, now I'm feeling a little nauseous, and I watched CNN for a half an hour last night. I think that might have amplified my symptoms because they said 100 million people might get it, and Paul Azan was very concerned. When Paul is concerned, I'm concerned. Because I have a thing for Paul Azan.
Wait a minute. Is your wife, Mishna, listening to this?
No, but I mean, it's harmless. I mean, because, Paul Azan probably doesn't like me.
Well, you don't know.
That's the worst
thing. Have you
asked? If your wife or your girlfriend says to you, do you like her? You should just never say this. She would never go out with me. Always say no. No, I don't like her. Because the other thing is that has no bearing on anything. You've just admitted your guilt, obviously.
The best is that you say, oh, she probably doesn't like me.
Yeah, she probably doesn't like me. That's not the point. No, I appreciate Paul Azan. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. aside from that she's stunning and very tall. Listen, New Jersey, I'm personally inviting you to come see us tomorrow morning at 1039 Washington Street. That's Maxwell's in Hoboken. Mark and I will be there with musician Ted Leo. We're going to have author Chris Hedges. We're going to have, of course, Lawton Smalls, Milf Cardinal Milligan, Johnny K Street. We're going to have some free coffee for you. We're looking forward to it. Hope you come down. If you're from Jersey, come down to Maxwell's in Hoboken. Paul Krasner was just on, and for some reason his site is down. I know there's been some complaints. I don't know what to tell you. Paul has left the building. But he says that paulkrasner.com is the address to see the Disney orgy, but it is not up right now. Perhaps it will be repaired shortly. Also, Paul Krasner will be appearing tonight at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, along with Kurt Vonnegut, Art Buchwald, and Barry Crimmins. It's an evening of American satire hosted by Seven Stories Press. That should be great. In a few minutes, we're going to have the Jedi poet Rick Burnley. This is just, this dude I met down at Camp Casey in Washington, D.C., who just came right up to me and started reciting poems off the top of his head that he has written. He moved me because he's from Positas, New Mexico, which is in between Santa Fe and Albuquerque, where I grew up. And Positas is a beautiful place, and he's just an old vet cat from Positas, and he's gonna come, riff. I hope he shows up. You think it? Oh, he's here already? Okay, right on, man. So let's get into this. Indictments are only days away in the leaked identity case involving who leaked the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Folks, prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald could lay down as many as 22 indictments. That's what the word on the street is. 22 indictments. That could be all against two people, or it could be 22 people. Who the hell knows? But if they're going after a conspiracy rap, my friends, it could be the entire administration.
It sounds to me like Patrick Fitzgerald is saying, I'm locking somebody up.
Yeah, I mean, this is not all of it, my friends. I mean, there's new allegation against Tom DeLay that he deliberately raised more money than he needed to throw parties at the 2000 presidential convention. David Safavian has been indicted. This is the Bush administration's former chief procurement official was arrested. Was he arrested? He was indicted Wednesday by a federal grand jury on charges of making false statements and obstructing investigations into a high-powered GOP lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who, of course, has also been indicted.
Yes.
Espionage in the White House. How do you like this? This is right in Dick Cheney's office. A U.S. Marine has been charged with espionage while working for the vice president. He was doing espionage on behalf of the Philippines, of a counter, I guess it was a political group in the Philippines. That
they
was
were planning
to,
a coup.
Wow. So that's right there. The most secretive man in the universe who runs the most secretive administration ever in American history has got a spy literally in his bathroom just about. Spying at the Pentagon. Here's a little more scandal. Lawrence Franklin, a senior Defense Department official, pleaded guilty Wednesday to three criminal counts for improperly retaining and disclosing classified information. He shared secret military information with two pro-Israeli lobbyists and an Israeli official in an effort to create a back channel to the Bush administration on Middle East policy. Bill Frist, of course, under SEC investigation for insider trading in his own family's company. Meanwhile, in Iraq, 36 people were killed and 95 wounded yesterday when a suicide bomber attacked a mosque on the first day of Ramadan. And we've got the crap is hitting the fan everywhere, and now all of a sudden we've all got to be worried about bird flu. They're going to shift the focus to bird flu. Is Karl Rove sitting in the basement of the White House going, I've got a vial, let me open it, we're in trouble?
This is amazing. I don't even know if Democrats had made up a scenario for a sitcom about Republicans stepping in it, that they would have gone this far. I mean, it's amazing that there were so many people with their fingers in so many pies and have overreached so far that it's come to this. And what it's done to the Republican Party, Mark, and people need to not lose sight of this, it has eroded the twin auras that economic conservatives have used for years to define the Republican Party. Competence and personal responsibility. Because none of these guys are taking any personal responsibility. You watch what happens through all this. So you think Tom DeLay is going to say, well, yeah, maybe I made a mistake? No. He's on Ronnie Earl's tail. He's not taking personal responsibility for anything.
Well, that's what these guys will do. They'll deny it till they're dead. I mean, Tom DeLay, it's going to take an awful lot to wipe that smug smile off of that guy's face, because this is how these guys act. They just pretend like nothing's wrong, but now you feel it starting to break a little bit. And on top of that, on top of the an ongoing unsolvable problem in Iraq, on top of the multiple indictments that could come come down as early as this week. On top of the House Majority Leader under investigation and everything else going on, you've got chaos in the GOP, chaos in the Republican organization around the nomination of Harriet Myers as Supreme Court Justice. And this is also good news because, you know, as a Democrat, as a progressive, as a liberal person, we often complain about a lack of strategy on behalf of the Democrats. Well, now they don't need one quite yet because they can just sit around and watch this chaos. You've got Trent Lott saying that she's incompetent. You've got Trent Lott saying that there are minorities that could have done a better job than this woman, Harriet Myers. And when Trent Lott is talking about giving minorities work, that means something is definitely wrong.
The times, they are changing.
That's for sure. You've got Sam Brownback, the theocrat out of Kansas, who's also commenting in terms of her incapacity to toe the theocratic party line and impose a moral repression on the populace of the country by denying them their civil rights, and their freedom of speech and everything else. So you've got an infighting in the GOP in terms of you got religious fanatic Republicans who don't think she's going to go far enough, and you've got regular old, grand old party fiscal conservative states' rights type saying that she's just, bottom line, not capable of doing the job. And also you've got the Supreme Court, John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts' Supreme Court, now ruling on a case in relation to the right to die, the assisted suicide issue, where he's about to usurp state rights. What the hell happened to what these guys stood for?
Well, I'll tell you what. In the black community, we have a word for what Trent Lott's doing and what Sam Brownback is doing.
Yeah.
It's called timing, okay? Uh-huh. Because what they're doing is trying to reinforce with that religious right base of theirs in Mississippi and in Kansas, say, hey, we're still with you. Yeah, we're backing your play on this, because they have not yet gotten a majority of the religious right on board with the Harriet Myers thing. Now, that doesn't say that some, knight in shining armor may come to Bush's rescue here and actually convince these people to get on the bus. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Bush is going to be faced with an extraordinary problem in terms of what he does with this nomination. The cronyism stain is not going to go away.
Yeah, exactly. So why don't you tell me and our audience a little bit about what you were speculating before the show in terms of what's he going to do if the Republicans say no?
You know, there's a really limited range of options here. He can try and tough it out. Mm-hmm. He can try and, continue the charm offensive, continue to try and convince people in his own party, in his own base, to back someone that is also in his own party from his own base, which is an incredible thing in and of itself. The other thing he can do is, tactfully get her to step aside while he figures out who he comes with next. If he comes with one of the doctrinaire conservatives that they want, that the Brownbacks and the Lotts and the James Dobsons want, then he risks a serious problem on the Senate floor where there may be a filibuster that will kill that nomination. So what does he do? How does he spend what are obviously empty pockets that in terms of his political capital? He doesn't have any left. So now what does he do?
Cry.
Yeah, that could be part of it. Or get mad and say to the conservative base, you know what? Stick it. I'm nominating somebody else. That's my choice.
Wow, man. This is going to get exciting. These are exciting times, my friends. Exciting times. The new Chief Justice, John Roberts, actually yesterday presented himself as a defender of federal authority as opposed to states' authority in terms of assisted suicides. We're going to get into that in a second. It's 16 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it is Thursday morning. Happy to be here for you people. Are you listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio? Listen, New Jersey, you're personally invited by Mark Riley, myself, Dan Pashman, John Crimmings, Kalo.
Yeah,
we're all personally inviting you, and Little Goliath, of course, who we haven't had pipe in today on the political situation that's unfolding. But we're all inviting you tomorrow to New Jersey. We are broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken at 1039 Washington Street. we'll be joined by Ted Leo, the fabulous. Have I ever used that word? What the hell just happened?
The fabulous Ted Leo.
What the hell just happened to me? The fabulous, the rocking Ted Leo will be there.
That's better.
Chris Hedges is going to be there, one of the powerful journalists / authors of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning and Leaving the Ten Commandments. I just spaced the name of the book. But it's a book about what, Dan? What? Go ahead and say it in front of it. Losing Moses on the Freeway. You can talk right to the people, you know. You
understand? It's Losing Moses on the Freeway, Mark.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you. I'm glad that you're here, man. And how many
He's
of
a helpful guy,
the,
ain't he?
Yeah, yes, he is.
I'm here to help.
That's hilarious. So, okay, what I'm telling you is we'll be in Hoboken and Maxwell, so come down and enjoy that. And also, we're going to have radio theater again in just a few minutes. And now, let's get into this, because this is an interesting topic to me. New Chief Justice John Roberts basically presented himself as an aggressive defender of federal authority to block doctor-assisted suicides, as his court argued over an Oregon law that lets doctors help terminally ill patients put an end to it all. The court will decide if the federal government or the states has the last word on the last moment. Now, obviously, Oregon has voted for this. The people of Oregon want it. It's not like the thing is some sort of craze. They've had just over 200 people have engaged in this process. I think it's an important process. I think it's an insanely difficult decision for people to make, for families to make. I think it should be a necessary freedom for an individual to have the option to do it safely within the criterion of illness. I guess the concern on the court and the way they're framing this is it stifles the FDA's ability to regulate drugs. Now, what's interesting about this particular court is that so many of them have had like three justices have had cancer. A fourth justice has a spouse who counsels children with untreatable cancer. So this is an issue that is very close to at least half the court, and there isn't anybody who hasn't been touched by the pain of somebody with untreatable cancer. And I just don't think it's an FDA issue, Riley. I don't know what you think, but they're trying to compare it to drugs like steroids, to drugs like painkillers. There's the medical marijuana issue, which I guess Clarence Thomas once voted to uphold the state's decision to okay that in certain cases. It just seems to me that we're going to move forward as a culture and not to religify this thing, like John Ashcroft once argued that it is that assisted suicide is an improper use of medication and violates federal drug laws, but he's a man of religion. So I believe that one of the unspoken cores of this whole issue is that they believe that excruciating pain makes you closer to God. And I'm sure in the head of someone like John Ashcroft, the possibility of a non-believer surrendering his soul to God in those last moments is elevated by pain and lack of choice over how to enter the land of the dead. I've always been a little tweaky about this, because I think at the core of this, in terms of outside of political elements, is not only the unspoken religious component, but there's the reality that if people make this choice, it disables the ability of hospitals, doctors, drug companies, hospices, home care professionals, creditors to make money. It potentially stifles the business of dying, which I'm sure, if you crunch the numbers, is a huge part of the medical and the country's evil economy. This is one of those freedoms that people should be able to have before their entire bank and their family's bank is depleted because of this sickness.
Well, what the people who oppose this, and this includes Ashcroft and some of the questions that our new chief justice ran here, what they do is very cleverly link physician assisted suicide to drug dealing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if it's morphine? What happens if it's steroids? Link it to drugs that people hate, and then people will hate physician assisted suicide. Not that they have anything in common necessarily, except for the fact that you have to use a drug, I guess, to end somebody's life. But the bottom line is they know that this is a specious argument. It does not make sense to start talking about heroin and morphine in the same context as a drug to end someone's life. It's not about any of that. But they do it anyway because they know the public eats this sort of thing up.
And that's exactly what Justice Souter stated, that he compared the use of the drugs in this way to steroids or date rape drugs or what you're talking about is, quote, seems worlds away from what we're talking about here, end quote. I just don't know what their impetus is. It's not like people are going to be rushing to kill themselves. They can do that any old way. It's not like Oregon has become some sort of
theme park of assisted suicide. This is just a practical service that people should be afforded. I think that they should, I just think it has to do with money and this imposed morality of theocrats.
Yeah, and it may not be in that order. It may be about the theocrats. Remember, John Ashcroft was their darling when he was attorney general, and he scored big brownie points by pursuing this in the first place. They could have left Oregon alone. The voters of Oregon had already spoken on this issue. And you see this happening again and again. It happened with medical marijuana as well, where the government decides, well, we're going after, state laws, in many cases, state laws that were enacted through referenda.
And this is fundamentally against conservative political philosophy.
It is supposed to be. They are the states' rights people. When it came to black folks, that's what they ran. States' rights. States' rights. Trent Lott's buddy Strom Thurmond. Big states' rights guy. But when it comes to something they don't like or something that offends their religious sensibilities, suddenly the government has to, the feds have to get involved.
Well, this is the first time back when they were talking about states' rights like that, they didn't have full control of the federal government either.
No, they didn't. Just the lynch, the ropes.
866-303-2270. Where do you pipe in on this? Is assisted suicide okay? Should it be allowed, encouraged, legislated? Let us know what you think. 866-303-2270. We'd like to hear from you, and we'll get into more of it in a minute. And we've also got Jedi poet Rick Burnley coming up. I can't wait for this. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Now, the Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Mark Maron entertains a gaggle of groovy guests at a swinging downtown pad in Mark After Dark.
Hey, 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 hep cats and kittens, welcome to Mark After Dark, where we hang out with the brightest stars in the heavens of Hollywood. I'm looking around at Jimmy Kahn, Sammy Davis, Lenny Bruce is over there. How you doing, baby? So now that I'm comfortable in my satin pajamas and monogram bathrobes, let's wander around and talk to the guests. Yes. Well, now, who do we have here?
It's me, Mark Riley. There are no celebrity guests. It's the middle of the night. And if you're going to do this, you can't do it in my house. My wife is just about to lose it on you.
Is he still here?
Oh, hey, who do we have here? It looks like singer Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet.
Actually, we're Riley's neighbors, John and Laura Hendricks.
We're not singers or anything. We both work at H&R Block. We're just too polite to leave.
Well, babe, you're the hottest ticket in showbiz today.
Thank you.
So look who's here, the hottest comic out there. He's blowing people's minds with his far-out take on things. Lenny Bruce, ladies and gentlemen.
I really don't know who Lenny Bruce is. Could you just pay me for the pizza, mister? I really have to get back to work.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I want him out now.
This has been Mark After Dark on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
In New Jersey, I want you there tomorrow, 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken. That's Maxwell's. We'll be there. We'll have Ted Leo with us. We'll have Chris Hedges with us. We'll have Lawton Smalls with us. We'll have some free coffee with you. That's 6 to 9. You can touch Pops Riley.
Well, no, you
yeah.
don't.
Yeah. You can also email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. But we'll see you in Jersey. Right now, we're going to take a few calls on a very heavy topic. We are talking about the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on assisted suicide. It seems that they are overreaching states' rights in terms of assisted suicide in the case of Oregon. Oregon has voted for assisted suicide. The people there want it. It has not gotten out of control. It is not something that they voted twice for it, actually, and it's not gotten out of control. It is a painful decision for anybody to make, but I think it is one that should be allowed to be made. And they are trying to lump it in with drug dealing or working around the FDA in some conditions. And I think that they're also using religion as part of this. But I think, as painful as it is, that it should be a right that people have. Let's talk to some people. Barbara, listening in New Jersey, how are you?
Hi,
Barbara.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. What's on your mind about this issue?
Well, first of all, I'm for assisted suicide. But I just wanted to tell you a story. A few years ago, my sister was 58, and she had emphysema. And she, over the course of a year, had been on a respirator 3 times.
Mm.
And there came a point where, you know, she didn't want any more equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't literally dying. I think she could have survived longer, even though the state she was in, you know, she didn't like the state she was in. But she was in the hospital, and the hospital agreed to give her morphine over the course of 3 days until she died.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a common practice. And I was really shocked that the hospital knew that within 3 days she would die if they just gave her high doses of morphine for 3 days because of her condition.
She agreed.
And I never understood why hospitals are allowed to do that. I thought it was great that she got her wishes, but I never understood that.
Oh, so it was her, they made an agreement with her. Well, I don't think that, thanks for your call, Barbara. I don't think that hospitals are allowed to do that, but I think it does happen. You know, my father used to be a physician, and I've heard these stories before that, this happens. They do this.
Well, yeah, under certain circumstances, if they feel that a patient, wants a particular sequence of events to take place, they will do things that might, under other circumstances, be at least a violation of hospital regulations.
Well, I'll tell you, obviously there needs to be a criterion set for, you know, what conditions are necessary for this to be allowed to happen if it's going to be, you know, I'm sure in Oregon there are specifics.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, there are parameters to which you can't just say, well, I feel depressed.
Can I
get hooked up? I think it has to be a terminal illness. It has to be supported by the individual and the family, I would imagine. Dan in LIB, listening to LIB in New Jersey, how are you?
Hey, Dan.
Dan, hey, how are you? What's going on?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
You got something you want to share?
I just got a couple thoughts about the whole thing. Basically, you know, there is a point where you got to be careful that
suicide.
Yes, suicide doesn't just become like, you know, an opportunity for people to just commit suicide.
Yeah, I mentioned that, yeah.
But, sorry, I didn't hear you mention that.
That's all right.
But there was the interesting thing that I was thinking about, which is I work at a vet's office, right?
Yeah.
And we put to sleep animals on a daily basis,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And in 99% of the cases, you know, the animal needs it, and the owners are happy that, you know, it's happening in, like, a peaceful fashion and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, and everybody's better for it in the end, you know? And I don't know. So I'm for the assisted suicide thing. And I don't really think it should be up to the Supreme Court, you know? I mean, it's a person's wishes, not you know, the country's wishes, whether or not you should...
Right, be able to do that.
Well, okay. you know,
thanks,
Dan,
for your call, Dan.
Yeah, it's important that what Dan just said for this reason. It got to the Supreme Court because of a specific set of circumstances. The AG, John Ashcroft, didn't like it. The AG, John Ashcroft, was playing to his religious base. That's why it wound up to the Supreme Court.
It's one of these things where you have religious fanatics on one side saying that, I guess their belief is that if you commit suicide, that's a sin against God. And that you can't have that. I also think it's their belief that people should die in pain as an example to other people. I don't know what it means, but in a rational society, decisions like this can and are being made by people every day, whether it's legal or not.
Yeah, well, remember, Jack Kevorkian is doing a hard time for his role.
Jack
Kevorkian,
to me, is one of the great, he's a courageous cowboy of an idea that that needed attention, that he gave attention to, and that is actually a very humanitarian act, I believe. Elena, listening in San Francisco.
Morning, Mark and Mark.
Good morning.
Hi.
Maren, I'm only a couple years younger than you,
yeah,
and I've already lost both of my parents to really difficult cancers that were extremely painful, but was only pain management, and I've also worked as a hospice nurse.
Yeah.
So when I hear these people use this as political gain, it makes the dark side of me say that I hope someday soon they're lying in their bed, crapping themselves and crying out in pain to die.
Mm.
Because I've seen that enough, and I think that that's just hideous.
Yeah, and you've had some experience where people are medicated into a peaceful permanent slumber.
No, we did have my aunt who, yeah, she had been a polio survivor, and she had the agreement with us that should that happen to her, she wanted to have the plug pulled,
mm-hmm.
and we did do that. That's, mm-hmm. I haven't had to take care of anybody else in the hospice like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for your call, Elena.
Welcome.
Thanks, Elena. You know, that's interesting. Is there a difference between pulling a plug and actually assisting someone in dying? I think there may be a fine line there.
Well, that's something that'd be interesting to ask a religious fanatic, you know, because God knows they're willing to keep you know, anybody alive who is just, you know, breathing.
Yeah.
Like Terry Schiavo, as a gesture to God, and in that they must be protected. See, I believe that. I don't like it when religious ideology or religious dogma coincides so well with the kind of exploitive economic practices of healthcare facilities, that it just seems to me that there has to be some underlying truth to the fact that the industry of dying and of medicating the dying and of really zapping bank accounts of people who are ill is an incredible billion-dollar industry in this country, and it has something to play on. Yeah, Dan.
I just wanted to add, you know, I know this fact that plays into what you're saying, Mark, that actually 80% of the amount of money that is spent in the average American's life on health care is spent in the last 2 years of life.
See, there's a business, there's an industry that really wants that. They're banking on that death money.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This definitely cuts into it, unless they're going to charge you, you know, $100,000 to actually get the pills necessary to kill yourself.
Well, you know, the more money that people have in their old age, the easier it is, obviously, for people to take that money by keeping people alive. It's just that I think that there are a lot of Americans who have had some experience with pulling the plug. Even some of the people that opposed Terry Schiavo had experience with people in their own family.
Tom DeLay,
yeah,
had to take his own father out after an injury. I believe they pulled the plug on him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
but that didn't stop him from politicizing Terry Schiavo. I want to make a transition here. In a couple minutes, we're going to have the Jedi poet Rick Burnley, who I met down at Camp Casey in Washington. He pulled me aside and started telling me poems. He lives out in Placidas, New Mexico, and I hope he brought me a T-shirt. So stay tuned for that. It's Rick Burnley, the Jedi poet. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as News Daddy. But I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline. I'm having a funky good time with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, News Daddy.
But look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, 49 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
Heads up, New Jersey. We're coming to you tomorrow morning, 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken. That's Maxwell's. We'll be there from 6 to 9 tomorrow. We got musician Ted Leo. We've got Chris Hedges, one of our favorite guests. He's the writer, Chris Hedges. We're going to have Lawton Smalls, Milf Cardinal Milfington, Johnny K Street, Free Coffee, Maxwell's in Hoboken. Tomorrow morning, we'll see you there. You can always email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Right now, our next guest described himself as a Jedi poet, and he spent the last few months traveling with Cindy Sheehan from Crawford, Texas to Washington, D.C. I met him down at Camp Casey in Washington, and I just I mentioned to him, I said, you know, I work over at Air America, and Rick Burnley, our guest, says, well, I got some poems for you, and he laid them on me. Now, Rick, you've been traveling with Cindy Sheehan all over the country. You're a vet yourself, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, but because of the year that I was born, I was too young for Korea and too old for Vietnam, so I kind of slipped in the cracks. I was in the Navy in 1959.
All right, now you pulled me aside and you did one of the poems that I'd like you to lay on us here. I think it was called Georgie Boy.
Okay, yeah. Georgie Boy thinks your kid's his toy, and he's gonna ship him off to war. You can hear him squawk, he's a chicken hawk, he won't put up with that no more. He doesn't have to, like Nero, he runs a show, he snaps his fingers, your kid's got to go. When he had his chance, he opted to stay back. He didn't want to be there ducking bullets and flak. He claims he was flying fighters in the Alabama Air National Guard. You think to find one person who remembered him there wouldn't be all that hard? Especially now they got that $60,000 reward. I guess he was flying one of them phantom jets. Phantom pilot in a phantom plane. Chicken hawks all except for Powell, who finally surrendered to insanity, killing thousands of people to get one man. That's a crime against humanity. Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, Cheney and Bush, chicken hawks all, every one. They're hot to send your kids to war, but they've never been under the gun. Most of our generals were pretty upset, and they thought to rush to war was a real bad bet, but there was no one around to hear their beef, and they had to obey the commander-in-chief, because one thing no one could foil was Georgie's plan to get the oil. He was itching to run amok, filled with the lust to bomb Iraq. Well, we went in and did the dirty deed, fueled by the warmonger's boundless greed, but it wasn't the cakewalk that Cheney said, and thousands of people are crippled and dead. Things haven't worked out like they wanted, and the whole thing's a giant mess. But the last thing we can ever expect is for Georgie to confess that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam didn't knock down the towers, and thousands of people have died needlessly, and many of the deaths were ours. So, Georgie, don't tell us we went to war because we were being humane. We just slaughtered thousands of people, and that's just clearly insane.
Our guest is Rick Burnley. He calls himself a Jedi poet. I love that one. And you've been in New York for a couple of weeks, and you've been in contact with, I didn't even realize, I gotta be honest with you, that we had a New York City poet laureate. I guess that's my ignorance. And you've been in contact with him?
Well, I haven't been in contact with him at this. He was at Camp Casey, and somebody pointed him out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared one of my poems. He was quite enthusiastic about it and asked if I had a copy of it, because when he returned to New York, he was going to be addressing a symposium of poets, and he wanted to read it.
Now, you were down in Union Square, and you were performing down there. I know there's always a little something going on there. You had some trouble?
Well, the problems that I had in Union Square is they like to keep our voice squelched. So mm-hmm. I have a street musician's 12-volt amp that allows me to do some poetry without yelling. And last night, the police came over and gave me a warning that what I was doing was illegal. If I persisted, that they would issue me a summons and confiscate my equipment. So that's the free speech area. I think Union Square is historical for that, but that doesn't seem to be practiced as much as it should.
You got a song for us, Rich?
Yeah, Rick? I do have a song.
Sorry, you got to do it. Yeah. We only got a couple minutes. Can we pull it off?
Sure, we can do it. Okay. This song is called The Vampires of War. Vampires of war need the blood of their youth to fulfill their unholy dreams. They launch their wars quite casually, but they never, ever, ever know, they never hear the screams. War's a game that weak men play with the lives of the young and the poor. And they lie about their motives, and we never learn the score. If you believe the fabrications that our government likes to weave, well, I got a bridge that I'll sell you in Brooklyn. Can you spell naive? They're reckless and they're careless, 'cause what have they got to lose? It's your kids and your money and the drunk on power, not booze. They squander the wealth of the nation and they spill the blood of our young. And the losers of wars who did the same crimes were tried, convicted, and hung. The vampires of war, these pimps of
cheap death. They sell bombs to the devil himself. They crack crocodile tears, but light by their leers as their ammo flies off their shelves. The vampires of war sell fear as a product. If we buy it, it doesn't come cheap. War's harvest is one of pain and great suffering, and the winds of karma don't sleep. Hey, America, where you going? The whole world wants to know. We're leaving our values behind in the dust while the bloodsuckers run the show. Hey, and here's a question for you vampires of war. We'd like to know who you're working for. Don't tell us you're doing the work of God, 'cause you took us to war when the devil gave the nod. You took us to war when the devil gave the nod.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's Rick Burnley. I really appreciate you being here, Rick. You're a hardcore cat who's out there on the road doing the real work. I appreciate seeing you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Rick. Tomorrow morning, please join us. We're in New Jersey tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's. That's at 1039 Washington Street in Hoboken, New Jersey. Ted Wheel will be there. Chris Hedges will be there. Lawton Smalls will be there. Pops Riley will be there. Come by, have some free coffee with us. Look forward to seeing you. Good show today, Riley.
Good show today. Wow. Free coffee?
Yeah, there's going to be free coffee, and you know, I've only been to Hoboken once.
Oh, I've been there a bunch of times, and Maxwell's a great place.
Free Entenmann's.
Free Entenmann's.
Yeah, that's what I hear, free Entenmann's. I'll see you there tomorrow morning.
See you there tomorrow, Air America Radio.